Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Happy Friday, everybody. Great to have you with us on News Radio 1070 WKOK on this, the first official day of summer. Well, if it's going to be the first official day of summer, you need to break out the beverages and kick back on your deck. It's going to actually be sunny this weekend. And enjoy those beverages, a little barbecue, whatever it may be. Temperature's going to be up near 80 degrees. And sunshine, lots of sunshine. That means you need to stop at Brewers Outlet. And it's one-stop shopping. You want the best selection of beer? They got it. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. The bags are right there at the register. And the pickle bar. Bob Buehner and I have talked about this. Sean and I have talked about this. Kevin endorses it. The pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills. Indeed, second to none. This is all at Brewers Outlet. Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Yes, it's the first official weekend of summer. And the 4th of July is right around the corner. Because of that, you need to stock up. And we are in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great staff, great service department, and incredible product lines. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Coming up on the show today, Penn State basketball gets back to work next week with acclimation and installments, and then finally, as Patrick told me, he says, "Hey, when you," he said, "come out to watch." He said, "Come out and watch us after the 4th of July." Said, "That's when," he said, "I think things will kick into gear for us." All right, so after the 4th of July, I'll go over there. We're going to hear from Lamar Stevens in just a few moments. Tony Knopp on today's show. Phil Steele on today's show, and we're going to revisit with John Urschel on today's show. NBA draft was last night. When the draft was over with, Penn State's Josh Reeves signed a two-way contract with the Dallas Mavericks. So what does a two-way contract mean? Well, the NBA rosters were allowed to expand from 15 to 17 2 years ago. And those two extra spots are for two-way contracts. Each NBA team is allowed to have up to two two-way contracts. So when you're playing in the G League, and this means Josh would be playing in the G League. When you're playing in the G League, you're playing for a higher salary than the normal average G League player because you are technically a part of the 17-man roster with the big club. When you go to the NBA, there's already a designated salary that you transition to for that. You're also, under this agreement, not allowed to be in the NBA no more than 45 days during the course of a season. So you may be on the shuttle back and forth, and you may end up staying like a Quinn Cook did this year with the Golden State Warriors. So that's the two-way contract, and Josh Reeves signed that two-way contract with the Mavericks right after the draft last night. And he will be playing for the Dallas Mavericks summer league team. So that's the Josh Reeves story, and how it played out for him last night. We knew he would not be drafted, but we also said it would not be long before a team signed him. Not only did he get signed, it was a two-way contract with the Dallas Mavericks, which is the best free agent contract you can get. We will come back, Lamar Stevens, in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. It is an interesting dynamic here with Penn State football being relatively young in many spots. Redshirt sophomore quarterback, sophomore tailback, redshirt sophomore tailback, two freshman tailbacks. Right? Then you look over, true sophomore tight end. Redshirt freshman wideout. Redshirt sophomore slot receiver. Another redshirt freshman wide receiver. You look at the defense. Young and quick across the board. Penn State football is a team that, even though the depth took a hit with the transfers, Penn State still has a deep football team, but is a very young team and very athletic. Conversely, there is Penn State basketball. And in Penn State basketball, I've said once, and you've heard me say it 100 times on this show, that Penn State basketball, I feel, and all the gnashing of teeth over, you know, what they need to do and so forth, I said, look, there's something simple to this. Penn State has always excelled and been better when they've been the older team. Penn State needed to transition to being the older team. Penn State's been the young team for a long time. That's not the case this year. Penn State is the older team. Lamar Stevens, true senior. Mike Watkins, he'll be a senior. Jamari Wheeler, the point guard, junior. Miles Dredd, let's face it, full season of starting under his belt, experienced sophomore. Isaiah Brockington, redshirt sophomore, third year, and played in the NCAA tournament. Then you have the grad transfer. Got to graduate first before I can actually really talk about him. The grad transfer will obviously be a senior, or, you know, a grad transfer. Trent Buttrick, junior. You've got John Hara, junior. You've got Myron Jones, who played a lot last year, so that's an experienced sophomore. And then you've got a really talented freshman that I think can really blossom here, especially with the help of Lamar Stevens, in Seth Lundy. Patrick Chambers wants to be a 10-deep team because he wants to play all 10 guys because they want to run and they want to move. They do not want to be a stationary team. And the optimism around football is with the youth and the athleticism. The optimism about Penn State basketball is with the experience because of one guy coming back, and that's Lamar Stevens. And we had a chance after his decision to talk with him.
It's great to be on here.
All right, let's start with this. Obviously, it's going to be a tough decision no matter what. What expectations did you have when this process started, Lamar, and did it meet those expectations?
The expectations I had was just to go in, gain as much knowledge as I can, see where I stood this year and even in the future. Just to gain knowledge and for my team, for myself, and be able to learn from that and make the proper decision off of that.
You have teammates along the way that obviously may go through the same experience themselves down the road. How strongly will you recommend to them that they go through this?
I think it's important to definitely go through this process, but I also think that it's important to go at the right time. I think, there's a lot of guys that, just do it just to do it. And I feel like if you want to do it, you need to really put your head down, get in the gym, and work hard. And like I said, I gained so much from this experience and learned so much about my game and even just about the game in general that, it's going to benefit me. So I think this is definitely an experience to do at the appropriate time.
You made, I want to say, 6 workouts. Does that sound right? I think you were supposed to do 8, but you ended up with 6. So, Lamar, in the 6, was the message consistent, or did you find out something a little bit different each time?
For the most part, it was very consistent through all 6 workouts. But, some teams vary. Some teams got a little bit more detailed than others. And, those details were what separated and the little things that I knew I had to work on. And it's just kind of like a little reminder for me, to focus on that when I do get back in the gym.
All right. So let's get to that part. Let's do pro and con here. I think you pretty much found out exactly what you already knew. So let's start with the part. Lamar, you need to be better at, they said.
They just said that I really need to show a consistent 3-point shot. I have the athleticism. I have the scoring instinct, and I'm a versatile defender, and that's something that, you know, they look for in today's NBA. I think the only thing, you know, that they said that I really needed to work on was that, just being consistent from the three-point line.
Also, when you're around people who are trying to teach, one of the more valuable things they can do is they can reinforce what you're doing right, because that then invigorates the confidence. What did they tell you were doing right?
Well, they said that I'm an extremely versatile defender. I can guard any position on the court. And they also said I have a high level body and athleticism. And, you know, and that, those are the main things that they harped on, you know, for what I do bring to the table.
All right, now here's the next part. Last year you were the MVP of the NIT, and you stayed here for the first 6 week session. So you're here for both sessions. Pat at one point did tell you, "Hey, why don't you get out of the gym for a while?" And of course, you did not. Right, kept going. How much time do you want to take between now and June 24th when classes start again? How much time away from the court do you want to stay away just to refresh yourself?
I plan on just taking a day or two off after making the announcement and just getting my mind and my body right again. I'll probably go do some yoga or go do a lift, but I'm going to stay out of the basketball court for a couple of days. Then I'll probably get back at it on Monday.
You come from a fabulous family. Lamar. Yeah. I've been around them. You know, they're great people.
Yeah.
How important were they in the process of this for you?
They're very important. Parents are my biggest influence, so I really do respect their opinion. But honestly, they let me make this decision on my own. Of course, when I, you know, needed a little guidance, I came to them, and they were able to, you know, give me their 2 cents, and that definitely helped. But they made this on me. Whatever, you know, I decided to do, they had my back, and were going to support me to the end.
This is also the first year that agents or advisors were allowed to be used by players. You took advantage of that. How important was that in the process to have somebody as a guiding hand?
It was extremely important because my agent did a great job for me. He taught me so much about the business, and I think that he really, you know, helped me get out there. You know, this is my first time testing, so I never got to experience what it was like without having the agent, but this being my first time and having him, he guided me throughout this whole process. And I never felt like I needed anything, like I didn't know anything. You know what I'm saying? I felt like he was always there to help me and guide me throughout this whole process, and it made it 10 times easier.
Head coach Patrick Chambers talked to me about this process with you going back a year ago, back in July. I know he was in constant contact with you during the course of the season about, hey, look, you've got to do this. From a player's perspective, what does it mean to you that your head coach feels that strongly about your future as an individual and not always just looking personally in his own program?
That means a lot to me. I spent most of my time in the gym with, you know, the coaches, and for the head coach to say that about me, it just boosts my confidence and just boosts my belief that I can get there as well. And I think we both have that shared confidence in each other and everything that we do.
He also put a lot on you last year to be the leader, which you did become. Yeah. What did you learn about being a leader now that you've had the experience of doing it both on and off the floor, and how you can apply it as a senior for this upcoming season for this team?
Oh, I learned so much about being a leader coming up from last year where we really struggled at times. And I think that, you know, I learned leadership has no days off, and I need to bring it every day. I need to hold my guys accountable every day, and they need to hold me accountable every day. And that's what's going to make a great team. And that's what we did those last 10 games. And that's why we were able, you know, to finish so strong.
Seth Lundy will enter the program, another Roman Catholic graduate along the way. Will he be a player that you're looking to take under your wing this year?
No question, because I played with Steph when he was a freshman at Roman, and it's the same thing. You know, we're just in college now, and you know, there's so much that it's hard to learn, play as a freshman. You know, in the Big Ten, it's not easy. So if I can help speed up that process, I definitely will in any way possible.
What would it mean to Lamar Stevens to finish this career the right way, not just as a player, but as a program?
Yeah. It'll mean everything to me, because ever since I decided to come to Penn State, that was my goal, to do something that this program has never done before. And if I'm able to, you know, keep my word and give everything that I have to the team and to the program, then I'll be extremely happy with myself, because I know I gave everything I had. And hopefully that leads to me accomplishing those goals that I talked about when I was a senior in high school.
I know I asked you this question last night, but this is a different forum, so I'll re-ask it. When Mike Watkins came back, right, and he announced a month ago he'd come back, what does that mean, not just team-wise, but also what does that do for your game when he's out there?
Well, Mike's able to impact the game in every way possible. So having Mike out there, he really covers up a lot of mistakes for everybody. So I think he's the best shot blocker in the country. And I think that, like I said yesterday, I think he's a bona fide pro when healthy. So I think having him back is just a huge boost for the team.
Well, guess what? What you did last night was, quote, a huge boost for the team. So, Lamar, thanks so much. Take a couple days out of the gym. And then, on behalf of Patrick Chambers, I can tell you, then you can get back to work.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Lamar Stevens. He is the centerpiece of what Patrick Chambers wants to do in this upcoming season for Penn State basketball. And now he'll be back on campus. Starting next week, they'll do some acclimation, they'll do some installment of what they want to do, and then they'll really kick it into gear into practice. So I asked Pat, I said, usually I think you guys know I'll go over and I'll watch in the summer, I don't know, 4 or 5 practices, because they'll go for an hour at a time. It's not that they're not long or extensive, but at least gives you a read on what you're watching with the team. And, you know, I mean, there'll be times where Pat will text me and says, hey, Steve, why don't you come on over and watch this, see a couple things. I said, sure. And so I got a hold of him. I said, you know, when are you going to start? He says, well, we're going to start next week. He said, but it'd be better for you if you came out to the 4th of July. He says, because at that point they'll be playing. And so that's what we'll do. We'll do that and get a better read on the team, yeah, especially the 3 freshmen coming in. Seth Lundy's probably the one that, you know, if he stays healthy, it's going to be ticketed to play a lot. Football, of course, will get underway right at the beginning of August. And this is a young but very athletic team. And it's got better depth, I think, than people realize. Yes, they took a hit in depth. But I think depth-wise, they're pretty good at 40 out of the 44 spots. In other words, 2 deep, 22 players, 44 players. I think they're 4 spots where in the preseason they could find answers on depth. Because I think their makings are there to find answers on depth. All right. Coming up next half hour, Tony Knopp, as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Brewers Outlet.
There's a reason Sunbury Motors Ford has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1950.
Isn't it time you found out why?
Now through the end of June, SMC has 125 new trucks with savings up to $16,000. The Ford F-150 has been the number one selling vehicle for 42 consecutive years.
And one is sold every 29 seconds.
SMC has 2019 F-150s from $25,904. Plus there's 0% financing for up to 72 months on 2019 F-150s. There's 16 of the all-new 2019 Ford Ranger 4x4s in both extended and crew cabs, starting as low as $34,870. And Sunbury Motors needs your old truck, so they'll give you the most money for your truck trade,
period.
There's no reason to go anywhere else. Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
Over 100 years, Sunbury Motors. Brewers Outlet, the beverage superstock superstores ready for all of your warm weather activities. Camping, picnics, grilling, visit Brewers Outlet first. For microbrews, imports, domestic specialties, they got them. Grab some pickles at the Pickle Bar, Steve Jones's favorite place. Snacks, Brewers Outlet has that covered. Soda, sports drinks, check. Weekly specials, too. And there's lots of convenient parking. So get all the refreshments everyone will love for your next outdoor gathering at Brewers Outlet, the beverage superstock superstore, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, and we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Let's bring in Tony Knopp now, the business side of sports. Hello, Tony. Great to have you with us.
Everything's going great. Hope it's well by you guys. I hear there's been no sunshine for the end of June for you guys.
We will turn the corner, and when it happens, it will be dramatic.
We're hoping so, too. That's the whole selling point for Los Angeles, and I'm watching the Kauai Parade, and it's sunny and beautiful in Toronto. It's 61 and raining here. You know, it's all turned around.
It's obvious where you should stay, then.
Right.
What does it say about the NBA in particular, and this does happen in baseball, too, with Scott Boras, that an agent like Rich Paul can have some of the leverage that he does have with a client?
It will be very interesting to see what happens with the NBA's collective bargaining agreement the next time it comes up in a few years here. One, because the agents and the players have so much power because of the seemingly lopsided effect that a superstar has on a team. But at the same time, you know, you have this salary cap that's based on revenues, and that revenue formula is outdated, right? That revenue formula was put together when the Golden State Warriors were selling for $400 million in 2012, or when Donald Sterling, you know, had the Clippers, you know, valued at $150 million, and they ended up selling for $2.1 billion. So you have this really interesting circumstance now where the talent pool is getting a lot deeper, the players are getting a lot more powerful, and then you have people on both sides of the analytics spectrum saying, because, you know, baseball's got a totally different problem, but on both sides of the analytics spectrum saying, it's a superstar-driven league, and then others saying, well, is it really a superstar-driven league? Because in the NBA Finals, for the last five games, none of the starters were top five picks.
Right.
So what it says for the league is they're going to have a really interesting and maybe nasty conversation in collective bargaining in 2 years, because these owners have gotten paper wealthy to the point where you have the Warriors saying, we'll just pay the quadruple repeater tax and have a $400 million payroll when the salary cap's 118. And now I'm reading that the Sixers, Bucks, and Raptors are considering doing it. And you and I know where that goes. Where that ends up is you have eight teams that are going for it and everybody else just tanking.
Right. And, in fact, Toronto, one step further, they did not have a single lottery pick on the roster.
No, and the interesting thing for them is even in that scenario, so they've built it the way that you believe the league would want them to build it, right? They have a lot of guys who didn't move around in free agency. Marc Gasol got traded from the Lakers to the Grizzlies, and then he gets traded to the Raptors. Kawhi Leonard, you know, even though he can't supermax because he, you know, doesn't have 10 years of service, but he was traded from the Spurs to the Raptors. Now we both know that he kind of held out and forced the trade. But so now you have this team. You have two totally polar opposite teams, and it's exactly what we were just saying, where the Golden State Warriors have a super high-cost free agent that came in, and they brought in DeMarcus Cousins on the mid-level. Then you have the Raptors who are built right, and both of them really only have like a two-year window before this becomes economically unfeasible for them. So is that what the NBA is becoming now? Like, I've got this five-year window, and then after that, I got to dump everything and rebuild for 5 years. Is that really what the league wants? And it's so fascinating because I don't know how they're going to figure it out. Because if you're the players, you're going to say, you know what, the salary cap should extend into the G League team. And if we're going to be in a situation where guys like DeJounte Murray or Jamal Murray or guys are going to show up that are going to be superstars that we didn't know were going to be superstars, we need to have the money, the resources, and the allocation to be able to do that with our minor league system.
Right.
So it is going to be this Kawhi Leonard thing will be so fascinating, and Rich Paul has started it all off by saying, we demand to go here.
Right. And they got what they wanted. You're talking about money and we're talking about money and resources.
Well, the hard thing about it is if you're in New Orleans now, you just picked up three first-round picks. I thought, look, I live in Lakerland. I'm not a Laker fan. It's an awfully steep price to pay. LeBron's going to be 40. And, look, if you look at the dynasties for the last 20 years, the only one that's lasted longer than 5 years has been the Spurs. And that is an outlier of a situation where you have a superstar in Tim Duncan who took less money and wants to be in a small market. But every other dynasty, the early Lakers, the Lakers again in 2010, the Celtics with the big three, the Heat with the big three, and the Warriors, all at year five, broke apart.
Right. It's obviously been more money. You talked about the Clippers going for $150 to $2.1
billion,
which is remarkable. TV contracts are very high in every sport. Labor is very high in every sport. You talk about what it costs to go to a Laker game. Is there a concern in your business when you talk to the corporate partners that there's a line that they're starting to skirt with that won't send the markets higher?
It's interesting what we see with the companies. We just talked about how in Europe, I actually didn't draw the analogy, but the danger that the NBA has and that the MLB has already found themselves in is that you have a collection of teams that are actively going for it and the vast majority that are not. You have haves and have-nots. And North America is trying to create a system where that there's an interchange between those, right? So it's tough to say that for 5 years you're good and then 5 years you're bad, but the alternate universe is European soccer where it's literally the same five teams every year for 30 years.
Right.
I think the same analogy is starting to be true on the corporate side. You have really big players on the corporate side who are so forward thinking about how they're investing in sports and live events, and they know that that's what the boomers like to spend their discretionary income on, and it's what the millennials spend all of their income on. So you get these brands, like we have a lot of them here, like Anheuser-Busch and Verizon and MGM Resorts, who are doing everything they can to just get fully, deeply integrated into the actual event itself, right? And, you know, so for MGM Resorts, that means your experience in Vegas carries forward to your experience when you're placing bets at the Capital One Center in D.C. Capital One's another one of our customers, and the D.C. Right. Monumental Sports, which owns the Wizards, they're partners of ours. And they're creating this whole thing where we're going to know where Steve Jones is, and we want to know where he is, what he's spending, what he bets on, what he buys, and what he doesn't. And what's happening there is it's leaving less room for the have-nots, right? So right. 20 years ago, you had, you know, Larry Smith's construction company was a big partner, and that's still the case in college a lot. Those guys and girls are getting pushed out a little bit or not as incentivized to spend because of how this is starting to matriculate into the consumer spend. So, you know, the reality is, you know, Darren Revelle spoke for us years ago from ESPN at one of our conferences, and his theory was we're going to see smaller venues, and the majority of the venues are actually going to be controlled by brands. So it's going to be like the Samsung right. deck at Capital One Arena, and they're going to control the tickets for that deck. And right. I don't know if that's too far off from where we're headed, to be honest.
Well, it's interesting because you and I have talked about smaller venues before, that it makes more sense, especially in a TV world. But you have mm-hmm. a lot of TV contracts coming up for play. The new commissioner of the Big Ten is going to have to deal with one in 2022. They'll be mm-hmm. the first ones up in college. The NFL's coming up, which is right around the time they have to have the collective bargaining agreement done. So my question is, when it comes to that part, is it possible to tap this thing out?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. And I think we're starting to see it a little bit. What's going to be really fascinating is how the people who are placing their bets on it vertically integrate into it. So Sinclair Group, for example, just bought all the Fox RSNs. And Sinclair Group is known as being a extremely tough negotiator. But they yes. now own that. They own the news. They own content across the board, right? And, you know, as you see people starting to overpay for the content that they believe is that valuable, you see other pieces of content which are seemingly struggling. The ACC network isn't on the greatest footing right now. The Pac-12 is a complete tire fire, which we've talked about a number of times. So I think you can tap out on the non-premium brands, and I think that's going to hurt the future, but I don't think anybody that's in charge of it right now cares. The biggest problem we have in sports business across the board is you have this entire generation is maximizing and squeezing everything they can for the next 5 to 10 years, not paying yeah. attention to the fact that, yeah, Samsung's running the deck at the game, but you don't have 12-year-olds at the game that paid $2.50 to get there like I was.
Right.
And
yeah.
you already see it like in the college bowl system, right? You know, specific bowls mm-hmm. dominate, and other bowls are just sound stages so that they can get a 4.6 rating on ESPN.
Right.
And we're headed that direction. So you can completely tap out the have-nots, and you just create this small, you know, grouping of haves, and then, you know, where does a medium-sized buyer go?
Wait,
and then,
which then,
and then
brings,
in 10
yeah.
or 20 years, who knows if they're even here? You know, I watched Bob Bowman yeah. speak a couple of years ago when he was in charge of MLB Advanced Media, and he said, you know, what we would take a lot of pride at in 1950, whatever, boxing, horse racing, and baseball were the top three sports, and we're still
That's
one
right.
of them now. And I kind of thought, well, maybe, right? You might still be one
yeah.
of them now. But who knows? Like, is football, is the NFL, is, you know, Major League Baseball, is the NBA going to go the way of boxing and horse racing?
Yeah. You paid $2.50 a candlestick. I paid $2 at Fenway.
Yep.
For my bleacher,
exactly.
for my bleacher seat. Which brings me now to, I'll give you an example, Pittsburgh. Pirates attendance is down, and they're not a good team. And not only are they not a good team, they are not entertaining. And it hurts me to say that because I personally, the president of the club, Frank Coonley, I consider him a friend. When you're not actively going for it, to me the problem you run into, Tony, is the fans then vote. And the way they vote is by not going.
Mm-hmm.
I think...
One of the problems you have there is so Thomas Toll, one of the owners of the Pirates or of the Steelers, he's trying to buy the Pirates. I coach
right.
kids out here in basketball. You have this is what they're dealing with on the team side right now, because you can always go through a process like Philly did and have 5 years of terrible teams, and then you're mm-hmm. good and you sell out. And everybody right. who's in charge, when that happens, you know, that tide rises their boat. So in our industry, it's a very small industry for the listeners who, you know, might have some interest in it. If you happen to be working at the Cleveland Cavaliers when LeBron James showed up the first time, there was a group of about 18 people there who were all really impressive people, but their career skipped three levels because they mm-hmm. were there when they built that experience. And the same thing happens at a lot of these teams as they get good and bad. And that's really all they're incentivized to do. So they're not incentivized to sit and look, as you know, the Pittsburgh Pirates, to sit and look at the community and say, hey, are we really setting up for having fans here in 20 years? Mm-hmm. Are we really setting up for the next generation? Or are we just trying to make sure that we're stemming the bleeding as much as we can right now? And that goes all the way back to what we were talking about with Major League Baseball is, you know, Major League Baseball has two really big problems right now. One, everybody has figured out that there's haves and have-nots,
yep.
right? And the other thing is everybody's figured out that young players rule the day, but the collective bargaining agreement pays players when they get older.
Yeah.
So like Cody Bellinger is 24 years old. He's making $550,000 a year. By the time he's supposed to cash in, there's just going to be another Cody Bellinger.
And they will cite, and they cite analytics saying that anybody that's 33 or older doesn't perform at a high enough level. So they want
yeah,
younger
exactly.
players performing at a higher level based on analytics.
And the CBA is completely flipped the opposite direction.
That's exactly right.
So you're better off tanking for 3 years. I mean, what gets lost on this is, and the sports fans know this, we watch it, the Cubs tanked for years before they won.
No doubt.
The Royals tanked for years. The Astros
yeah.
tanked for years. And this isn't one or two teams where this has happened. This has happened now for the majority of the world champions. Right? I mean,
yeah.
the Dodgers didn't really tank, but I mean, they're the modern-day Buffalo Bills right now. I had to say
yeah.
it. I'm a Giants fan. I had to throw it out there. But
it must have it therapeutically felt good.
It is. It is.
Yeah, no, and you're right. I mean, the Philadelphia 76ers in our own backyard They were very open about it. Right. Now they're actually very good. They aren't great, but they're very good. Okay.
And but the thing is, so they just tanked for how long, right? I mean, a decade. And they collected a bunch of assets, and they made a run. And they were okay last year, and now you're starting to build a fan base. And then they were pretty good this year, and you're building a fan base. And now what? Now they've got two free agents who are up for big max deals. Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris are both going to make big dollars.
Right.
And they can't
yep.
afford them. And right. The shooting guard, Redick, is also a free agent.
Yeah.
So you're way over the cap, and you spent 10 years building a team that you got to take a run at for 3 years, and now you're in this repeater tax. If you go into next season, it's just, man, I do not envy the fact that they have to try to figure this out, because the other way to do it is to just say, forget it, eliminate, you know, payroll, eliminate the salary cap, and then we turn into European soccer where you have the same five teams every year.
Right, every year, same five over and over again. Daniel Kaplan on The Athletic wrote a thoughtful article today about a cashless Super Bowl and Wimbledon being cashless. Mm-hmm. In other words, don't bother bringing currency to the venue. They'll take plastic or they'll off your phone your debit. And it looks like the Falcons are going to do it. Atlanta United's going to do it. Tampa Bay Rays are doing it. And Tottenham is doing it in their brand new mega stadium. Is that the trend that you expect to see as time goes, that it's going to become cashless venues along with kiosks for gambling at the venues?
Mm-hmm. It's going to move so much faster than the fan thinks it's going to move towards, first of all, being totally cashless and totally paperless. We're there. The technology exists. It's been tested. It works. People are doing it all over Europe right now. A lot of the European teams, especially in the English Premier League, have been using RFID or, you know, tap to pay for years. And the reason they do it is two things. One, they want to know who you are. Right, they're going to make the argument that this is about security and it's about, you know, ease of use and convenience, and that's all well and good, but that's not what it's about. They want to know who you are because they want to sell you more potato chips. They want to sell you jerseys afterwards, and they want to, you know, that's what they're trying to do, and they're trying to trade you convenience for this, and that convenience means you're going to buy more beer. Because imagine a world where you don't have to wait in line to buy a beer because you don't have to wait for people to pay. You literally walk up, take one, scan your phone the way you would scan it onto a boarding pass for a plane, and walk away with your beer. And you could legitimately, you know, Ticketmaster's present system, they're the first ones doing this, but a lot of people are right behind them. I could walk up, and if you were an usher at the stadium during the Michigan game, and I've got three beers in my hands and two hot dogs, I don't even have to pull my ticket out. Just because I'm standing in front of you, you could pull your phone out and say, hello, Mr. Knopf, your seat's right down there. So these things are not just here. They're coming a lot faster than everybody thinks. Cashless will be the norm. And then a few municipalities are trying to legislate against it, saying that it's ageist. There's another word for it, but it's basically ageist. That, you know, there's a population that's not cashless and doesn't ever want to be cashless, and they don't feel secure
they're not
doing that.
Yeah, they're not savvy enough technology-wise,
Right. But they're losing that battle all over. So this battle's already happening in New York City on the consumer side. So there's a lot of restaurants that are cashless now, especially QSRs. And this has already been legislated, and they've sided on the side of cashless is civil. You can do it. So the only thing that would stop that from happening when you're talking about a professional team or a college team is a lot of those venues actually have municipalities that have invested in them. So they use the bond measure to pay for the stadium, and they're going to try to use that argument that, well, you have to look out for the citizenship because they actually put this together. I don't think it's going to hold up.
No, I don't think so either. Pebble Beach, a huge corporate success?
It was okay. The weather wasn't very good. So you lost
Surprising,
a little bit there.
Yeah.
But, you know, they generally do better. The corporations, believe it or not, you and I would rather be at Pebble Beach, but they'd rather be in the big market. So Wingfoot will do better next year than Pebble Beach this year.
Yeah, they'd rather be at Bethpage Black. They'd rather be at Wingfoot.
I mean, right.
They love the U.S. The corporate people love the New York City feel.
Love it. And they love the idea of being in that time zone. You know, the Midwest does okay. When they stick around Chicago, they do pretty well. But, you know, the West Coast bias doesn't just exist in, quote-unquote, the media. It exists on the corporate spend as well. A lot of people spend money out here. You know, Silicon Valley in particular does very well. But when you're talking about national events, the exposure is just bigger, stronger. The ticket price is higher. Sponsorship dollars are higher. All when it's, you know, on the East Coast.
Yeah. yet the ratings are off the chart because you had primetime television golf. Yeah, you're not going to get primetime television golf at Wingfoot.
No, you're not. So the TV numbers do better, but the corporations don't really. The only way the corporations care about the TV numbers is when they're, you know, throwing a logo on a bag or when they're advertising during the actual event. When you're actually taking somebody to the event, they prefer to be back there.
So Victor Hovland having Oklahoma State in his bag did nothing for the corporate people.
And he's not going to have Oklahoma State on his bag as of yesterday. I think he probably declared he was pro, right?
Absolutely. He's going to Cromwell, Connecticut, and the Travelers. And guess what? There'll be no Oklahoma State on his bag this week.
There'll be no Oklahoma State. Yeah, he's going to have a shiny new bag with a shiny new logo on it. I guarantee that.
Shocking. Tony. Believe it or not, a half hour is up. It flies by because there's a lot of interesting topics to talk about. As always, you handle them perfectly.
I had one thing I desperately wanted to get your opinion on because we're out of time. I've got to bring it up. But
how refreshing
is it to watch the Women's World Cup and not see world-class football players flopping all over the field? I would love to see an analysis of how few dives there are in the Women's World Cup versus the men's. It's fantastic.
It's ball movement, there's flow, and the only time somebody goes down is if there's a legitimate tackle and a play in the ball.
It's amazing. The men need to take notes. It's so much more fun to watch.
And I talk about this in basketball all the time. And you know what? The last month of the season, you had guys flopping, and it wasn't getting called.
Yeah.
See, I'm of the opinion in college basketball that the first 2 weeks of the season, anybody who flops, you get a technical.
I wish they would do it that way. The flopping is killing all sports. I mean, you're a 200-something-pound, you know, beast. I couldn't knock you over with a running start, and now all of a sudden you look like you got shot. Did somebody, you know, clip you with a cleat? Come on.
Really?
Yeah.
You're a finely conditioned, well-tuned athlete, and it just took that to do that?
It drives me nuts.
Tony, thanks so much. I look forward to our next conversation very, very much.
All right, my friend.
Tony Knopp. Next half hour, John Urschel. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, and News Radio 1070 WKOK.